The following is brought to you by the Shining Wizards Network, available on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboo, and at swn.shiningwizards.com.
Hello, all my Funko files. This is, of course, your groovy friend, the Wolfman Jack Foley, from the Forearms and Funk Radio Spectacular. You have the distinct pleasure, as do I, of listening to the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast, exclusively on the Shining Wizards Podcast Network at swn.shiningwizards.com. Oh!
Said, but ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 42 of the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. As always, your gracious host, the Impact player, Mr. Phil Rea. It's All Saints Day, El Toros de Santo. Did I say that right? The hell was it? Toros Los Santos. That's right. All Saints Day. Obviously, I'm saying it in Spanish because that's the theme of today's episode. Dave and I go into length about the legacy and the history of the legendary masked wrestler El Santo, and then his predecessor, his son, El Hijo de Santo. And when Dave first came to me with the idea, I didn't think we'd have enough material on Santo because a lot of his matches were in movies. So, you know, I figured this is not going to be good. But, you know, we kind of turned the El Santo legacy into El Hijo de Santo, and I think we did a good job of covering that. I hope you guys enjoyed last episode with Dave Millican. People were still talking about it. I am so grateful that we got to have him on. I was actually glad Mega Powers was in the studio for that. Fantastic episode. Guys, we have a lot of stuff planned for you, like a lot. Dave and I are getting footage by the day. We're swapping ideas. We're doing big things. And speaking of big things, I want to officially announce that we will have a time slot on Geek Life Radio. I want to shout out Jason Sorensen of Geek Life Radio. Jason just reached out to us. Some of the Wizard shows are getting on there from the network. I know Midnight Jury's on there. I know Shining Wizards is on there. So we're going to be on board with them. We're going to have an open spot on their network. And we're going to have a chance to go live, apparently. I don't know how that's going to work out, but hopefully we can do some live shows. It's going to be fantastic. So, with that being said, also I want to make a big announcement that our T-shirts on ProWrestlingTees.com will be up soon. And we have one logo, which is our regular logo that you see on the Facebook page and on every other page that I have. If you guys have another logo you want to shoot me, let me know. Any ideas for a logo, let us know. You can, of course, as always, contact us, facebook.com/turnbuckle throwbacks. We're on the tweet machine, at tbuckletbacks. Dave, I believe, is at Mr. Powers. Dave doesn't use Twitter a lot, though, so don't tweet Dave. But definitely hit Dave up on the Facebook. And, of course, you can email the show, turnbuckletthrowbacks1@gmail.com. We are on iTunes, Stitcher, The Shining Wizards Network, swn.shiningwizards.com, buzzsprout.com, and the Rantem Radio Network, Rantem Radio, RantemRadio.com. Shout out to AA and his crew. Okay, all that's out of the way. A couple of quick notes. I did watch the Triple H documentary, and I got to tell you, I had mixed feelings going into it because I know where he stands now politically, and I know the product on television right now is currently crappy, and you guys have every single right to be pissed off about that. And, you know, to be perfectly honest with you, it's not really good unless you're under 20 years old. But I have a little bit of a new respect for Triple H. And if you watch the documentary in the first disc anyway, you get a sense of the person that is Triple H and the compassion that he has for the business and for his family and his contribution to the business moving forward. I am under the impression that him and Stephanie are going to wind up taking over the company in the next couple of years, that Vince is now pushing 70. And, you know, I don't know how much longer Vince wants to work, but you can already tell that the influence is already there. Triple H is doing big things, opening the markets up, expanding the developmental territory, and doing good, positive things behind the scenes. Now, I don't know if that's going to translate into better television, but at least the company's going in somewhat of a right direction. I strongly suggest you get it. It's a good watch. I did get the Goldberg stuff. I didn't watch it yet. And I'm just catching up with that stuff while doing stuff for the show. So that's pretty much where I stand. So I'm going to turn the mics over to myself and Dave and enjoy the episode that is All Saints Day, which is, again, let me say it right, Todos Los Santos. That's right, Todos Los Santos, the legacy of El Santo and El Hijo de Santo. And, of course, from the current to the way back, you're listening to the Turnbuckle Throwback Wrestling Podcast exclusively on the Shining Wizards Network and the Rantham Radio Network and now Geek Life Radio. And it's going to be a good time. Good time to be had by all. Later.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
This is the Black Scorpion, and when I'm not looking for Sting or Tickles, I'm listening to the Shining Wizards Network, shiningwizards.com. Be a mark. Buy the shirt. I'm coming for you, Sting, and Tickles too.
What's up, kids? Big Phil here from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. When you're done with our show, head back over to the network and check out Pro Wrestling 101. That's right, Pro Wrestling 101 with Just Incredible. It's a show about the ins and outs of pro wrestling, hosted by 20-year veteran of the sport, hardcore icon Just Incredible. Now, that's not just the best. That's not just the coolest. That's Just Incredible. Exclusively on the Shining Wizards Network. What's up, kids? Big Phil here from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. As soon as you're done with our podcast, head back over to the Shining Wizards Network for 2.5 wrestlers. Two professional wrestlers, Pat Buck and Kevin Matthews. Oh, and that other guy, Jay Silva. They give you their insight to a wonderful yet corrupt industry of professional wrestling. So join the bad boys of podcasting, 2.5 wrestlers, exclusively on the Shining Wizards Network, swn.shiningwizards.com.
The Neckbreaker Podcast is a pro wrestling and heavy metal themed podcast. Guest interviews, wrestling headlines, and metal news, while hosts Brian and John get completely friggin' shit-faced. Past guests include Eric Bischoff, Fit for an Autopsy, Power Glove, and many, many more. So head on over to the Shining Wizards Network, swn.shiningwizards.com, and check out The Neckbreaker Podcast!
Hey, guys, it's your boy, the Impact player, Mr. Phil Rea from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. As soon as you're done with our podcast, head back over to swn.shiningwizards.com and check out my boys, The Midnight Jury. Mike and Adam host The Midnight Jury. It's a podcast that transports you back to the last old school generation. They debate in detail 80s and 90s pro wrestling, horror movies, and pop culture. Before the internet, before Blu-ray, and even before cell phones, there was the last old school, my old school generation. Check out my boys at The Midnight Jury. You won't regret it. They're pretty awesome.
Awesome. Awesome.
Hey, it's Big Phil from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. Check out my crew, the Fallen Angels. The Gideon Triplets, Kanzer, Krim, and Dante bring you the inside stories of pro wrestling. With over a decade of experience in the business, they bring a wealth of knowledge. Well, if they're getting along, for long enough to share it. Check out the Fallen Angels exclusively on the Shining Wizards Network, swn.shiningwizards.com. Hey, Big Phil here from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. When you're done with this podcast, head back over and check out my buddy from the north, Apex Radio, featuring the Stickman. Canadian wrestling fan and photographer Stickman has made a triumphant return to podcasting, bringing not only his perspective from north of the border, but also his unique brand of humor. If you find that amusing, eh? Check out my buddy Stickman exclusively on the Shining Wizards Network, SWN.shiningwizards.com. Loaded, loaded, loaded. It's the Forearms and Funk Radio Spectacular. Featuring the Wolfman Jack Foley. Along with the Stickman comes his longtime friend and compatriot from the north. The fantastic friend himself, the Wolfman Jack Foley. He will not only give you the business about the business, but he'll also be serving up a heaping plate of funk, baby. That's right, heaping plates of funk. Exclusively on the Shining Wizards Network. SWN.shiningwizards.com. Oh, Lord, that's funky. Hey, guys, Big Phil here from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. Check out my two boys, Chris Espo, Will Sweeney, the gurus of the gridiron, Tattoos and Touchdowns, live every Sunday exclusively on MoleLifeRadio.com from 10 a.m. to noon. All your insight, spot-on predictions, and quite honestly, a move before the bookie calls you, go to Tattoos and Touchdowns. Every Sunday, exclusively on MoleLifeRadio.com. Hey guys, Big Phil here from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. As soon as you're done with our show, head on over to RantomRadio.com, RantemRaidio, RantomRadio.com, where you'll hear the rant every Tuesday, the wrestling call-in show every Saturday, and you have What Are You Reading? For all your sports and entertainment needs, head on over to RantomRadio.com. Those guys are awesome. And of course, you can listen to the Turnbuckle Throwbacks in their rotation as well every week, exclusively on RantomRadio.com.
Do you remember when superstar Billy Graham went from roid head to karate master, back to roid head with a bad hip? If you do, listen to Phil Rea. He'll tell you all about it.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 42 of the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. As always, your gracious host, the Impact player, Mr. Phil Rea, and I'm joined via Skype with...
the Mega Powers.
So... we are 42 episodes in. Dave has been with me since July of this year, and we've covered much ground. This episode being no different, we've gone to the Far East, we've gone to the West, we've gone to the Northeast, the Southeast, but we haven't gone to Mexico yet. We haven't gone to the Southwest.
I'm surprised we haven't, but, you know, this is the perfect time to do so.
Dave sent me an idea. He said, Phil, let's do something for All Saints Day. Now, I am no longer Catholic. I was raised Catholic. Dave, were you raised Catholic? I don't even know your religion.
I was raised Catholic, but I don't really have a religion.
Okay, but you were raised Catholic, right?
Yeah.
Like most full-blooded American kids were.
Wrestling is my religion.
In the Northeast. All Saints Day, if anybody who doesn't know, is the it's actually the Feast of All Saints. It's celebrated on November 1st, which is our episode today. And by parts of Western Christianity, it's the first Sunday after the Pentecost in Eastern Christianity. In case anybody was wondering, that's All Saints Day. It's normally the day after Halloween, which is All Souls Day is Halloween. All Saints Day is November 1st.
Yeah.
All Souls Day being also Happy Halloween. Hope everybody had a wonderful Halloween. All right. So Dave said, let's do an All Saints Day show about the only wrestling saint that we know is El Santo.
Yeah, the patron saint of wrestling.
Right.
In my opinion.
Well, I mean, he's the only guy to have such a gimmick. I mean, there was no really... I mean, I don't. Professional wrestling doesn't really have a lot of religious gimmicks.
There actually is one. I'll have to pull it up somehow. I have this one, this really big book of luchadors where there actually is a priest in Mexico. I don't, you know, now that we're talking about it right now, I wish I like had some info on this guy. But
yeah, well, there was a priest in XPW also. But I mean, like.
No, this guy is like a legit priest. But
oh, he's a legit priest. Oh.
But he wears the mask. Like, he wrestles and he's a priest at the same time.
Well, today we're talking about El Santo, Rodolfo Guzman Huerta. More widely known, of course, as the Saint, which is El Santo in Spanish.
El Santo. Mascarado del Plata as well, the silver mask.
Mascarado del Plata. Yeah, he wore a generic silver mask, which is probably the most popular mask of any luchador. Is that safe to say?
Yeah, I would say so. That or Blue Demon, Mil Mascaras, even though he has like a million masks. But
But El Santo, much like our last episode, El Santo was more popular outside the ring.
Yeah.
He was an actor. He was a folk icon, comic books, cartoons. Honestly, when he passed away back in 84, it was the biggest funeral procession in Mexico.
Yeah, and if you've ever seen like a photo of this, it is absolutely insane. It's like just a sea of people, and you see this tiny little casket in that sea of people. It's absolutely insane.
He was born in Tulasingo, I think if I'm pronouncing it properly, Tulasingo in the Mexican state of Hidalgo. He was.
I have to ask Lopez about that.
Yeah, maybe Lopez can shed some light on our. Does poor Dan even speak Spanish that you've been abusing him for the last month and a half?
I'm sure he does.
I hope so, because you've been beating him up lately. all right. Here's the deal. He made his debut in the mid-30s, I believe, in Mexico City.
Yeah.
He went under his real name. He went under El Hombre Rojo, which was Red Man, not the rapper. El Demonio Negro, which is, of course, the Black Demon. And
I'm trying to be racist by saying that.
No. It was 1935, though. Yeah. And so lots of stuff was racist. And Hermosillo, number two, the Bat Two, which was the ripoff of the famous wrestler Jesus Velasquez, who was Hermosillo One.
If one bat wasn't enough, we had to have two bats in pro wrestling.
Right. So he started in the mid-30s, and the legacy, I mean, the man is timeless. Now, of course, Dave and I, doing our research, we really couldn't find anything of El Santo more than 5 or 6 minutes, because all of his matches were in his movies.
Yeah, like, you, if you find, like, any of his matches on YouTube or any of the such, it's kind of like the old school kind of, like, newsreel kind of footage. Like, you just get, you know, bits and pieces of his matches, but you don't really get a lot of his classic matches, because, you know, just in general, you know, with Mexico, it's really hard to come by, you know, a lot of these programs, and even a lot of his movies are lost to time. Like, some of them are just, you know, they didn't take good care of them, and they'll just never be seen again. But luckily there is some footage, and thank God there's a staple of his movies where would be like in the beginning of the movie and like midway into the movie, they would have like a full match with El Santo in it. And that was kind of also not just a staple for his movies, but for a lot of the luchador películas, if you want to call it that.
No, it's true.
Kind of films, yeah.
It's true. So in the early 50s, there was a comic book artist by the name of Jose Cruz, and he started the Santo comic book.
Yeah, which was actually kind of interesting, because those comics weren't your traditional comics, you know, where, you know, somebody would be drawing a picture, but they were actually like photo shoots, and then they would have like the caption bubble, you know, above their head, you know, as they kind of like posed in, you know, telling these stories, which it wasn't like a normal thing that we would get here in the US, but over in Mexico, you know, especially for the Santo comics, it was a popular form of representing comics and these characters.
I believe in Japan they did the same thing for Jushin Liger.
Really?
The whole comic book and cartoon thing, yeah. But this book went on for 35 years.
Yeah.
The book, it ran four different volumes and ran up until 1987. So the movies picked up in the early 50s. The first picture was The Man in a Silver Mask, which was supposed to star El Santo, but he declined it and thought it would fail commercially. Like, he was like, you know, I'm not going to do this. This is crazy. I'm a wrestler. I'm not an actor. And they made it instead with another guy. And, you know, it just picked up, you know. So in 58, there was a guy who invited Santo, who was also a wrestler and an actor. Apparently this was a common thing in Mexico. If you were a wrestler, it was almost like a carny folk. You can act, you could sing, you can – these guys were very talented, you know.
This is like the old school, like, Hollywood kind of style where you had to be multi-talented to get around. But if you've seen any of these movies, they're nothing – they're absolutely amazing, but the acting is all horrible.
Right. So, you know, he invited him to do a movie, and Santo wasn't willing to give up his career. But instead, I'll do it at the same time. So he appeared as a sidekick in a couple of movies, and then, you know, the movie started to take off. And on the – let's see, like, I know this was a big thing with Cuba, because there was one film that was being done in Cuba, and the filming ended just the day before Castro entered Havana and declared the victory of the revolution. And before he left before they became communists.
Perfect timing.
Yeah, right. I don't even think he meant to be like that, but, you know, Santo was still doing it, the sidekick thing, and then he became the film thing took off him in the 60s, like the third movie, which is Santo versus the Zombies, giving him his first starting role. And it was shown that the first time as a pro wrestler was moonlighting as pretty much a superhero.
Yeah.
You know? He did 53 Lucha Libre movies.
Yeah, and actually, funny enough, this is how I found out about El Santo's on a fateful afternoon watching Mystery Science Theater, and they showed, the English title is Samson versus the Vampire Women, but because when they dubbed these movies in English for the U.S., they changed his name to Samson, and that was my first taste of El Santo. Like, I saw this and it was just absolutely ridiculous. Vampire women, he's facing this dude in a mask who, once he rips off his mask, he's a werewolf. I was just losing my shit watching this.
That was Las Mujeres Vampiro, right?
Yes.
Right, okay. That was on MST 3000.
Yep.
And I saw it there too. Big fan of MST. Actually, Dave and I are going to do an MST-ish episode with No Holds Barred eventually. Now that we have the technology, we can do it. So that was the, you know, only four of Santo's 52 films were dubbed in English.
Yeah, and actually a good chunk of these are, not many of them are in English subtitles.
Right. Actually, he did a couple of his, some of the films went directly to late Latin American TV. The most successful film was The Mummies of Guanajuato. Guanajuato came out in 1970, and it co-starred the Blue Demon and Mil Máscaras, which is the uncle of WWE current superstar Alberto Del Rio.
Yeah.
And many Mexican movie fans consider it to be the best lucha film ever. We might have to do an MST-ish throwback theater on that, too.
Yeah, so many of these movies are just phenomenal. Some of my favorites are Santo and Blue Demon versus the Monsters.
Yep.
Which is just every form of bootleg Universal Studios, like classic monster you can think of. Frankenstein, Dracula, they have like the Mummy, but it just kind of looks like an old guy wrapped in some bandages. They didn't really have to do too much makeup on him. They just made sure he was really old and put bandages on him.
Yeah.
And I think the Wolfman was just a really hairy Mexican guy.
That's hysterical. That is hysterical. So now this has been now this goes on for friggin' 20-something years, 26, 27 years. By 1977, it started to die off. And Santo appeared in some more stuff. His last film was The Fury of the Karate Experts, shot in Florida in 82, the same year he actually retired, which is in September. He was 65 years. He was week before his 65th birthday.
Yeah.
Again, sign of the times, Kung Fu was huge in the 70s in pop culture. Huge.
Yeah, Shaw Brothers, Bruce Lee.
If you're a Marvel – yeah, I'm sorry, Dave. If you're a Marvel Comics guy, Power Man and Iron Fist – big karate comic book that I grew up with. You were saying, sir? I'm sorry, I cut you off there.
Oh yeah, like with Bruce Lee, Shaw Brothers. What else? Black Belt Jones, Karate Kid, Chuck Norris, all that stuff. Martial arts was had a good run from the 70s to the 80s.
Yeah, you had the Drunken Masters. You had the Wu-Tang. You had. Locally here in New York and New Jersey, I know Dave had it. I know I had it. On Saturday afternoons, you had the drive-in theater on channel, or whatever Dave's Fox affiliate was, but here it was Channel 5, and you had the drive-in theater. And it was, you know, midday, Saturday afternoons, you had either one or two karate movies, and they'd show everything. They'd show Bruce Lee, the Shaw Brothers. They'd show everything. They would show... you know, and then they would show, like, the 70s black exploitation movies, you know, like, you know, Shaft and Superfly and, you know, shit like that. So,
The Mac,
yeah, stuff like that. So, all right, getting back to El Santo. He was also a cartoon in Cartoon Network in Latin America in 2004. They did Mucha Lucha and El Tigre. Salute. El Tigre, The Adventures of Manny Rivera. Our outro this week is a rockabilly song by the band Southern Culture and on the skids, and they do a Santo Swings. So we're going to play that as our outro today. Good job on Dave picking that out.
Yes.
Again, we did swap some clips. Dave, let's get into that real quick. Let's talk.
Yeah, well, we had like a few original El Santo matches, but of course they're really short. You know, we'll hook you up with the links to them. First one you pulled up, which is Máscara contra Máscara match from El Spectro del Estrangular,
yep.
The Spectre of the Strangler, where El Santo faces Espanto.
Yeah, Espanto, and this was like a year into his starting roles.
Yeah.
So, and I thought the match was, listen, a lot of people, a lot of wrestling fans, a lot of wrestling purists that I speak to, I don't know, I can't speak the same for you. You might have some more input on this, but guys that I speak to and girls that I speak to are not really big into the lucha sensation.
I'll say this, and even talking about lucha today, some of it isn't, I love lucha, but some of that stuff just doesn't look very believable.
Right.
And I know Bret Hart talks some massive shit about Lucha Libre, even though he used, you know, planchas and topes and stuff like that in his matches. But especially back then, what this is like from a 63 movie, and, you know, I'm sure Luthez would be rolling around in his grave if he saw this match. But it's very basic. It's like lots of brawling, you know, head scissors, you know, sunset flips, just backdrops, you know, no frills. It's very, you know, performance based. But, you know, you get a fight. And that's what these people are paying for.
Yes. So, you know, this goes on and on. Like you sent me a couple of them. The Wolfman thing. Which I thought was pretty cool. Honestly, there's nothing. I mean, he was a pretty generic luchador. It wasn't like he did a couple of high flying moves. It was commonplace then still with the luchadors.
Yeah, and I think a lot of you know, I think he really, you know, this legacy was just kind of based out of the fact that, you know, he was in comic books, he was doing movies, and especially back then, that's a huge deal, unlike now where, you know, anybody can be in a movie or involved in something like that. But, you know, that was a big deal back then. And, you know, just goes to show whether you're Hulk Hogan or El Santo or something like that, you know, if the fans love you, it doesn't really matter too much what you're doing in the ring, you know, as long as you're saving face and you're doing what the fans expect. And here he just beats the shit out of this dude and takes his mask.
Yeah, pretty much. El Santo wasn't really – he was a safe luchador. And I say safe because he was the ultimate face wrestler, was never really a bad guy.
No.
And he had that respect of the fans because of the films. So his matches were pretty generic. Is that safe to say?
Yeah, it's pretty safe to say. If anything, he came off, to me at least, more like a brawler.
Right.
So when you see a lot of these matches, you're not really seeing him do, you know, any crazy high-flying moves, even though he would do stuff like topes and, you know, come off the top rope with the senton. But other than that, you know, it wasn't like the kind of lucha stuff that we see today. But, you know, if you wanted some wrestling, then you would have to, you know, watch a guy like Blue Demon, who is, you know, pretty much number two when it comes down to, you know, old school Lucha Libre. And he was number two in the movies, too, you know, right behind El Santo. But El Santo himself was not very technically sound.
But he had the premise of a technico, but he had the skill of a Rudo. Is that okay? All right. So at least we're on the same page with that. Okay.
Yeah.
The reason why I'm entertaining this is because of the legacy that was El Santo, and I think it's only fitting that we do an old school wrestling podcast that we give him his due. But the legacy moved on, and rather quickly. Santo was married several times, and he had a son from his first wife, Jorge, and who carried on the legend of the Silver Mask.
Yes.
El Mascaradón de Plata. Did I say that right? El Mascarado de Plata?
There you go.
Okay, there we go. All right, see, I'm learning. And he wrestles as El Hijo del Santo.
The son of Santo.
Now, El Hijo de Santo is actually still wrestling.
Yeah, he's 50 years young and still, like, whipping ass. And unlike his father, he's definitely more, you know, technically sound. Like, his matches are incredible, and we're about to get into some of them. And definitely more of the performer. And unlike his father, actually did go Rudo.
He did go Rudo. He was also a subject of a comic book and appeared in a Mexican reality show, Dave, called Dia de Perros.
Is that the one where he beats up the midget?
Yes. Day of the Dog? Day of Dogs? Dia, I don't know what Dia means. Jesus Christ, I wish I...
Wait, what was the name of it again?
Dia de Perros.
Yeah.
I know, like, Perros means dog.
Like, every dog has his day.
Something like that, yeah. And he was also...
Day of the Dog.
He was in an animated short, five episodes of a Mexican version of a Cartoon Network. Cartoon Network is good in Mexico.
Yeah.
Titled Santo Contra La Clones, Santo versus the Clones. And he's a he's an environmentalist. He's a spokesperson for something called Wild Coast, which is campaigning to save sea turtles.
Yeah.
On the Gulf of Mexico. So, all right. So, but El Hijo de Santo, like you said, is huge in Mexico, almost as big as his dad.
Yeah.
Let's see, 50 years old. What else do we know about El Hijo de Santo? He was El Korak before he became El Hijo de Santo, Salud.
Where he was, he did that, because he wanted to start early.
Right.
He did not have his father's, wishes, you know, to be a wrestler. So he started off, under that gimmick. And then once, El Santo was ready to give him the okay, that's when he became El Hijo del Santo.
Right. So, I mean, he had legendary feuds. Let's see. He was with Negro Casas, Pedro Aguayo Jr. I mean, his most notable feud was with he was actually a team against – he was actually against a very popular team that we grew up with. Well, actually, this is how I first discovered Eddie Guerrero. Eddie Guerrero was in a pay-per-view called AAA When Worlds Collide. Eddie Guerrero did some time in Japan. He was what was he in Japan? He wasn't
he was Black Tiger.
Black Tiger, right.
Black Tiger 3, I think.
Right, Black Tiger 3, but he was in Mexico as an American, as a heel, as an American
yes.
heel, with his partner Art Barr, rest in peace. They were the Los Gringos Locos, the crazy white guys.
Yes. This is a pretty significant feud because we didn't mention it earlier, but El Santo's famous partner
was Gory Guerrero.
Gory Guerrero, the right. father of Eddie Guerrero. And they were, what was their name? The Atomic Pair.
The Atomic Pair, that's right.
Yes. La Pareja Atomica. And this feud was based off of the fact that Eddie Guerrero was going off that, you know, his father was the one carrying the team, which from what we know about El Santo's style probably was the case. But still, people love El Santo. They love El Hijo del Santo. So this was crossing the line.
Yeah. And you know what? I honestly wanted to cover the whole match, but I think the entire card can be a podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm not gonna cover the match because the entire card was good. Conan was the main heel, and he was actually starting a book for them. And it's a very, very interesting card. WCW produced it. Conan booked it, and it started a wonderful relationship. But
there's even a Chico Santana match on there, too.
There is exactly a Chico. I think it's the first or the second match, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
But here's something... Here's something that really blew my mind, which I didn't know until earlier today.
Yes.
Art Barr sadly passed away right after this happened. He was...
Yeah, days after this.
Right. And, you know, El Hijo de Santo and his partner Octagon were victorious. The match got rave reviews. It started the new wave of dirt sheets. The internet was getting big. But it was also the last stand, like I said, for Gringos Locos because Art Barr passed away and the group breaks up. And then AAA owner Antonio Pena tried to run an angle with an evil version of El Santo, which was El Santo Negro,
yes.
who allegedly came from South America And when the other members of Santo's family objected, like, the feud, they totally scrapped it. And El Hijo de Santo then goes to CMLL.
Yeah.
Which is the equivalent of Hall and Nash going to, and Hogan going to WCW from WWE.
Absolutely.
And that was a big, big deal. And, you know, there was a whole, I mean, he's done so much more than his dad in terms of wrestling mainstream, not doing movies and stuff like that. You know, his dad pretty much wrestled in movies and that was it, and like the big cards back in the day. But
yeah,
El Hijo de Santo pretty much solidified the legacy of his dad.
Yeah.
And, you know,
and he even played his dad in the film Infraterrestre, which is a horrible movie, by the way. I own it and I don't like it at all, which is strange because I love bad movies, but this one was just too bad.
I mean, the generations go on and on. March of this year, Del Santo's sons were going to Japan to train with Noah.
Yeah.
And under the ring name of El Nieto Del Santo, which of course means the grandson of El Santo.
Mm.
And he's almost a year into his training, so we'll have yet another incarnation of El Hijo de Santo.
Yes, and unlike the other Santos, his mask has black trim around the eyes, so it's not the classic silver mask, but a variation of it.
Yeah. He does a camel clutch. He does a front flip diving headbutt, which his dad did. Dad did the diving headbutt also.
Which is insane because the headbutts these guys are doing, like they're doing the suicide dives, the topes, head first into people. Some of the matches we're going to bring up in a few, the dude's jumping off the top rope with his head out to the guy. It's insane.
Yeah, he's been AAA World Tag Champ, Mexican National Champion, Trios, Welterweight, Middleweight. He boxed CMLL Tag Team Champ twice with Negro Casas. He wrestled for UWA. You know, he was the WBC Champion, actually. And he had a PWI ranking of under 100. Which for luchadors is not very, which is rare, you know?
Yeah, because, you know, as much as a lot of people do love Lucha Libre, it's a lot of that talent doesn't really, you know, come into the public eye, you know?
Right.
Unfortunately, it's not the early to mid 90s and, you know, the WCW Nitro era and stuff like that where, you know, Lucha got its day in the shade, but nowadays, you know, nobody's really clamoring for Lucha Libre.
Well, let's be honest. I mean, the work rate isn't that great either. Not great. What I mean by great, I mean the workload isn't that much, I should say.
No.
Like, they're not traveling 300 days a year. They're just wrestling in Mexico, you know?
Yeah.
You know, they may travel to, you know.
Well, to be fair, a lot of the Japanese wrestlers only wrestle in Japan, with very few dates outside of Japan. So.
But they wrestle a lot more than the Mexican wrestlers. Mm. Like, they'll wrestle 300 days a year in Japan. They won't, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Luchadors don't wrestle. They don't have a schedule like Japan or the States do.
I don't know about that because there's like constantly lucha shows in Mexico. If you read Chris Jericho's book, because he spent some time down in Mexico, like there's constantly like shows like almost every day, and there's like several shows happening a day. So I don't know personally like the work schedules for a lot of these guys, but I know it's always busy with wrestling in Mexico.
Well, there's a lot more coverage now, so either way, whether they do or not, it's a big deal. All right, so let's get into some of your matches real quick.
Yeah, we just got a few here because you know, we're pulling two episodes in a week, so we're busy guys. But the first match I pulled up, and this was big for me because I didn't know this existed. I had this on VHS from High Spots back in the day. I think Eddie has the tape now, but it's a very interesting triangle match, which resulted from the heel turn of El Hijo del Santo, which you mentioned earlier. You know, he made the jump to CMLL.
Yep.
And when he made the jump, you know, he was during a six-man tag, a trios match, and Negro Casas is getting his ass handed to him. And, you know, out from the aisle comes who people think is Filano, who is like a relative of Negro Casas. So they're thinking, oh, you know, he's going to, you know, help save his relative. But once the cape flies off, it's El Hijo del Santo. This is like the equivalent of Hulk Hogan going into the NWO. This is huge.
All right, Dave, I got to step away for a second. Keep talking.
Yeah. There's fist fights breaking out in the crowd. You know, people are losing their shit. This is completely out of the woodwork. Nobody was expecting this at all. They said, you know, this legacy of El Hijo del Santo, legacy of El Santo. You know, they're good guys. It's the Saint. You know, you're not really seeing anything, any chicanery coming out of these guys. But, you know, El Hijo del Santo comes out, throws the cape off, attacks Negro Casas, leading to this big three-way match. El Dandy was a part of this match. So it's El Dandy versus Negro Casas versus El Hijo del Santo with the specifications that, you know, this is a hair versus mass match. So, but with Mexico, you know, as we kind of know, they got some interesting rules. Some of them aren't very clear to all of us, and I'm sure they're changing around, like, all the time. For this specific match, it's set up where for the first fall, all three men are involved. Whoever's the loser of this, you know, three-way match goes into the hair versus mask match later on.
Okay.
So then El Dandy and Negro Casas, they just beat the holy hell out of El Hijo del Santo. He's counted out. So, you know, unfortunately, he has to go into the mask versus hair match. So we're left with El Dandy versus Negro Casas. Negro Casas goes for the leg immediately on El Dandy and just beats him with a scorpion deathlock within minutes. And now we're left with El Dandy. His mullet is on the line against El Hijo del Santo's mask. Now this is where things get pretty serious. You know, as we mentioned earlier, a lot of Lucha Libre, the authentic Lucha Libre, for me at least, it doesn't totally look all that believable. And a lot of times when I see these guys get put into submissions and they're giving up immediately, it just looks so phony. But for this match and the match we're going to be talking about afterwards, it just gets serious. There's blood flowing like wine all over the place. And, you know, El Dandy's knee is out. El Santo is immediately attacking his leg. And for this match in particular, it's typical Lucha 2 out of 3 falls.
Yeah, almost every – I think 97% of the Lucha matches were 2 out of 3 falls.
Yeah, it's very rare to see like a one-fall match in Lucha Libre. And it's even rarer to see, you know, one-on-one. Typically their matches are, you know, tag matches. So we get for the first fall, we get El Santo pulling the victory off in short time with a Mexican surfboard, pulling El Dandy's hair, you know, pretty brutal as far as I'm concerned, because there at this point it's a fight. The mask is already ripped open. For the second fall, El Dandy is just working the head. He's biting his face. And as we know with El Santo, you know, his garb is all silver, you know, which more or less is a very, you know, just kind of like a, you know, kind of like wearing white. When there's blood covering you, it's red. Man's literally wearing the crimson mask, and just his entire body, everything is just covered in blood. And El Dandy gets a quick fall with a La Magistral cradle. And now we get into the third fall. This is typically in Lucha Libre, this is where shit gets serious. You know, first couple falls, they usually do go by pretty quick. And with this one, it's just brawling into the crowd. There's actually like a fan grabbing El Santo, trying to fight him during this, which, you know, just goes to show, you know, these fans were pretty serious about this stuff. These are like grown men that go to these shows. You don't really see too many kids, you know, in the front row.
And, no, mostly families and grown folk. Even and the old people like to sit in the front too, like they do in the South. Like the hairpin ladies, you know, you get those too.
Yeah, the stunt grannies.
The stunt grannies, exactly.
And it's just an absolute fight. And you know, one thing I got to give these guys, first of all, when you're in a mask versus mask or a mask versus hair match with El Santo, El Hijo del Santo, you know they're going to win. It's just how it goes. You know that they're going to win, but you have to have your belief suspended during these matches. And I really give these guys a lot of credit for that, how they just go balls out with all this, like the near falls. There's so many of them. It just really like tugs on you. Like, is this guy actually going to lose his mask? And they need to create that suspension and disbelief that this guy is going to, you know, possibly lose the match. You know, they're going for planches on the outside. They're being thrown into the crowd, into like the first couple rows. You know, as I mentioned, El Hijo del Santo does the headbutt from the top rope while the dude is standing. It's absolutely incredible.
One thing about the crowd, though, before you carry on.
Go for it.
Just the crowd in general. Any crowd in Mexico, in Japan, we talked about this in the last episode, too, with the Japan crowd. The Mexican fans are always in it.
Oh, yeah.
You don't hear silence. You don't hear, even with the Rudos. The Mexican wrestling fans are fans of everyone in Mexico. It's not, you know, the Rudos, so I remember watching the guys like Cibernético, and he was so over as a Rudo, as a heel, that, like, they were rooting for him harder than they were rooting for, you know, the technical, the face.
Yeah.
So the fans are fantastic. So I'm sorry, go ahead, man, finish your point.
Well, actually I'm glad you mentioned that, because typically the arenas will have like a Rudos section.
Yep.
Technico section. So, you know, if you have a particular affiliation with any of these wrestlers, you're probably going to be sitting on a certain side of the arena for it. And if you remember early TNA, they actually had a little Rudo section. What was it? What was the name of the original TNA arena? The Asylum, right?
The Asylum, yes, in Nashville.
Yeah, they used to have like a Rudo section until, you know, they moved shop over to Orlando, which, you know, a lot of people weren't happy about that. But we're not talking about TNA. We're talking about this.
Right, exactly.
But just the near falls and the, like, the back and forth between these guys was just phenomenal. And we're going to hook you up with that. And but in true El Hijo del Santo, El Santo fashion, he gets the camel clutch and El Dandy's done.
All right.
And the mullet is shaved off by this old Mexican dude dressed like Rod Roddy from The Price is Right. Cuts off the mullet, much to El Dandy's disgrace.
I love that Mega Powers makes a Rod Roddy reference.
You know, nobody else is making a Rod Roddy.
No, that's why we're the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast.
Yes.
We're as old school as you get, my friend.
Yes. But, yeah, this is a phenomenal match. You know, we have a heel, a Rudo, El Hijo del Santo. And just an absolutely thrilling Lucha Libre match. And, you know, as much as I love Lucha Libre, and I hate to keep bringing it up, just some of that stuff doesn't hit me like it used to. But watching these matches are just mind-blowing.
Yeah, you know, I like the bigger matches, which is why I'm glad that you brought up the AAA thing before. And I was talking about it briefly. And the more I'm watching it, I'm like, I just got to break it because I have it. In two parts, and it was WWE On Demand had it. That's where I got it from.
Yeah, actually, I think my copy was that I used to have. I think either Matt or Eddie has it, and we'll have to get it back, get a copy from them or something like that. It's like a really perfect copy.
I would definitely dig that. I like a better copy of mine. But, you know, the bigger cards, like the When Worlds Collide and Triple Mania, like they always, you know, they always had that premier match.
Yeah.
You know, the hair, the mask, the retirement, hair, mask, and retirement. They build good storylines in Mexico.
Yeah, I even remember seeing, it was a Máscara contra Máscara match between Atlantis and Villano 3.
Oh, there's like 12 of those guys.
Yeah, but I think like Villano 3 was like, he was a big one. He was even in WCW.
He was.
As might remember.
2 and 3 were in WCW, I believe.
Yeah. So Atlantis goes on to defeat Villano 3. And just the unmasking and everything was just so grand. It was incredibly emotional. Fans are crying. Viano's crying. Like the family is there with them. They can really make some really remarkable, you know, memorable moments, you know, with these kind of matches.
Right. You know, and the legacy that was El Santo and now that is El Hijo de Santo is, again, third and fourth generation now you're looking into.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy had like 25 grandchildren, you know.
Yeah.
So one guy was trying to use like the El Hijo de Santo's sons that are in NOAH. One of the grandchildren started using the grandson gimmick, and actually they took legal action. You know,
yeah.
it was that crazy. And he's so well respected. The family is so well respected that it's almost like Baba-ish, like how Baba is in Japan. That's how El Hijo del Santo and El Santo are recognized in their country, in a native country. Which intrigued me when we thought about doing a show like this, because they did a good job of pushing the big shows, and now with reality shows and, well, they call them novellas in Mexico, in Latin America, but they're pretty much soap operas, which is how Conan got big. Conan was huge in Mexico. He's not even Mexican. He's Cuban.
Yeah.
You know? And he started doing, he's a good-looking dude. He started doing the novellas, and, you know, that's how it's, you know, that's you get exposure, you know? And I know MTV a couple of years ago tried bringing lucha-style wrestling to the States. Had some phenomenal talent on it. It just didn't pan out very well.
No, not at all.
So, you know, it's just a matter of if you're a fan of it, you'll see it. If you're not, then it's just, you know, it's not for you. You have to be a fan of Lucha Libre. It's a preferred taste.
It's an acquired taste.
Yeah, you have to, you know, again, if a lot of, like I said in the beginning of the show, a lot of wrestling fans are not Lucha fans. They don't, they think it's, like Dave said, they think it's too fake looking, I should say.
Yeah.
You know, and they think that it's just not compelling.
Yeah, and I think, especially nowadays, you know, the masks and such, you know, it's not real. You know, to a lot of people, even guys like El Generico had a tough time getting, you know, respect.
He's Canadian.
Yeah.
He's not even American. He's Canadian.
Yeah. But when you're wearing a mask, especially in a place like Ring of Honor, you know, you're not really lined up to be the top guy anytime soon, you know?
No. And none of the guys that competed in Japan, you know, Benoit, Eddie Guerrero, a lot of guys that were, you know, did their tour would come over to Japan and Mexico, and they'd be in these tournaments, and pretty much it, you didn't win anything. You didn't get any singles pushes, you know?
Yeah.
So it's not really recognized as, the masked wrestler in general are not recognized as top guys. I mean, they've given guys like El Santo and Cibernético and Dr. Wagner. I mean, those guys have won singles titles, but again, they're not recognized as like world champions.
Yeah, they're not the first choices to be in any Hall of Fames or stuff like that. And
unless you're Triple A or CMML or whatever.
Yeah, and strangely enough, like the closest thing that we had to, you know, the next big thing was Mystico.
Right.
Who became
Sin Cara, yeah.
And he totally blew his spot in WWE.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I honestly think WWE tried to replace Rey Mysterio with Mystico.
Yeah.
Clearly. And I'm not going to fault the brass for trying to do that. Because even with Mysterio out for an extended period of time, Dave, they sell a ton of merch with Rey Mysterio.
Oh, yeah.
They're still putting out figures. They're still making masks. They still make DVDs. They still make magazines. They still make poster boards and belts. Yeah. And yeah, they still make masks. Like, you know, as last year I was – even at Mania this year, they still had Rey Mysterio swag at the you know, at the booths. So
– Oh, yeah, and definitely the, you know, Hispanic community is still like a, you know, a big chunk of their audience.
I respect the mask. I'm entertained by it, you know?
Yeah.
And I always had somebody in my neighborhood translate what was going on because I didn't speak Spanish. And then by the time I got to high school, you pick up every other word. You kind of had an idea. And thank God for the magazines.
Yeah.
Thank God for PWI and Inside Wrestling and The Wrestler because they corresponded for you. They told me who Perro Aguayo was and Mystico and, you know, La Parca and all those other guys, you know?
Yeah, that's how I heard about Psicosis and La Parca before they even came to WCW.
Yep. Yep. So, well, that was cool, man. I mean, you want to cover any more matches, or that was?
Yeah, I want to talk about this La Parca match real quick.
Oh, with the Hijo del Santo.
Yeah, because okay. This was still during Hijo del Santo's Rudo run, and you know, we all kind of know La Parca, the chairman of the board, you know, as a Rudo himself.
That's right, the chairman of the board.
So this time around, he's the Technico. But, you know, real quick, you know, similar to the El Dandy match, you know, this is, you know, high spots are in full effect. You know, these guys are just beating the holy hell out of each other. And La Parca's wearing like this.
The white suit, right?
Yeah, the white suit. And, well, first of all, the match starts off with Hijo del Santo ripping the lid of his mask. And the ref is like, you know, hey. You know, you'll get DQ'd, which I always thought was interesting that
they had two refs.
Not just they had two refs, but anywhere in wrestling, whether it was WWF or something like that, if a guy tried to take off somebody else's mask, you know, that was always referenced as a DQ, which I, you know, I think that would just be more so for Mexico, but that was like always a consistent thing. But you didn't see too many masked guys in WWF or WCW, all that, but
yeah.
Still, I found it interesting that, you know, no matter where you go, if you try to take a guy's mask off, that's a DQ.
Right. And El Hijo del Santo going heel was like the equivalent of Hulk Hogan going heel.
Yeah.
You know, that's what people don't realize that because it's not here. You know, but it was a big deal in Mexico, you know?
Yeah, we don't have, like, books on these guys or DVDs or anything like that, but still, you know.
It's what we read, man. And then now what we get on YouTube or whatever, but, you know, it's what we read as kids in magazines. You know, it was a big deal in Mexico, you know.
Absolutely. You know, when you have a guy who's a face and his father's a face for decades, you know, Hogan was a face, you know, for a good while, but, you know, not as long as, you know, these guys. So for that change to come into effect, especially in Mexico of all places, that's front page news. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep. And by the time the second clip, El Hijo del Santo was busted open.
He is gushing.
Like through the mask.
Through the mask. Like, you know, previously, you know, I said he was wearing the crimson mask. Like there's a... I think in the second part, there's like a portion where like the front of his mask is just completely red.
Do we know what year this is? This has to be like 96, right? 95?
Something like that.
Around the same time Hogan went heel.
Yeah.
Ironically.
Strangely enough.
Yep.
And these guys had like a real – these guys had like a long feud.
Yeah.
Amongst each other. I remember even have it somewhere in the house. There's like this one promotion, Revolucha. I forgot what the exact name of the company was, but they had a cage match against each other. This is, I think I want to say WWE used this for one of their matches, but I just love the ending of this one. Fucking La Parca just ties Santos' mask to the cage and then walks out. He ain't going to be taking that mask off, but that was just like a genius way to end a match. But for this, oh my God, it's just back and forth, you know, false finishes left and right. You know, no mask is on the line, none of that. It's just a blood feud between these guys. And I really enjoyed the ending, which, you know, this is where actually, before I get into the ending, you briefly mentioned the two refs. One is actually a Rudo ref, and one is actually a Technico ref.
Yes.
And there's actually a point in the match, like not too long before the ending, where they both are on the top rope, you know, struggling to you know, jockeying for leverage, and they both crotch each other on the top rope, and they're both lying down on the mat, you know, in agony because their nuts have been crunched on this top rope,
pretty much.
And the Rudo ref just picks up El Santo and puts him on top of La Parca and starts counting it. He gets a two count, but that was just like, for me, that was hilarious. I've never seen, I'm sure I've seen it before, but I wasn't expecting it for this match. Yeah. And that was just hilarious to see the Rudo ref just pulling. And these are like old guys. They're not
young guys at all.
They're always like, you know, prehistorically old when you see these refs. They're real. You don't see young refs in Mexico. But, you know, he just dragged his ass on top of La Parca and still got a two count. But the way that it ends is pretty pretty interesting because there's a ref bump.
Well, well, before we get into that, I just want to – about 5 or 6 minutes into the match, Santo's mask is almost off his face completely.
Yeah.
Right? And they're both, like, on the top rope. If you remember this part when they're both on the top rope just duking it out?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, all of a sudden, La Parca falls and, like, gets his nuts caught. And, like, he rolls over. But, like, his mask, La Parca's mask is almost, pretty much off at this point. I don't know what's hanging on to it.
It's the, like, the hood part of it. Like,
yeah.
It's over his head.
Right. So, all right, go ahead, carry on.
But yeah, the masks are, their masks and their costumes are just ripped
and bloody.
Shreds. Their costumes are all like almost completely red with blood. And, you know, finally there's like a ref bump, you know, La Parca gets thrown into the ropes, tries to go for an aerial maneuver, and without the Technico ref looking, Hijo del Santo just kicks him right in the nuts as he crumbles to the ground and makes the pin. The heel ref counts, and for some reason the Technico ref comes in, chucks the heel ref, and for whatever reason counts to four. And, you know, everybody thinks El Hijo del Santo has got the win, but he reverses the decision and gives it to La Parca. You know, so the two falls go to La Parca. And just a very, you know, dramatic match, you know, from start to finish. And if you see any matches with these guys, they're pretty epic. Like they spare no expense of beating the hell out of each other and ripping their masks.
And there you have it.
The
legacy of El Santo. That's probably going to be the name of this episode.
Yes.
Or All Saints Day, whatever. I haven't figured it out yet.
All Santos Day.
All Santos Day. Yeah, that's a good idea actually. But you see, again, It was nice to at least – thank God for YouTube, man, because I only have the one El Hijo del Santo match from AAA. So. But, I mean, again, this was something I read about as a kid. This is something I'm sure you looked up before we did the podcast. it's nice that we can go back and track this legacy. And who knows, maybe we'll see his kids in NOAA. Maybe we'll see his kids in the States. And there might be a resurgence of Lucha. You never know, depending on how the industry takes a turn.
Yeah, everything comes back in cycles, you know.
All righty, then. I think it's going to do it for us, huh, partner?
Yeah, I think that's good enough.
All right.
We can always cover more in the future, and I definitely would love to do the When Worlds Collide.
Yeah, we're going to do that as a whole podcast. Okay? Yeah. I think that's just a good card. Again, it was WCW produced, Conan promoted, and totally, I mean, cage matches, which were rare in Mexico. Yeah, the cage match.
It's a giant cage. It was not a small cage by any means.
No, it was a WCW cage. It was
like the fence, but it was like, I think it was like 20 feet high.
Yeah, yeah. That's what WCW had at one point. It was all their equipment with Mexican wrestlers.
Yeah.
Pretty much it.
I think the show was in Texas or
California. California.
California.
Yep. Yep. The sports arena. So.
Yeah.
All right, Mega Powers. That's going to do it for Mega Powers and the Impact Player. This has been episode 42 of the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. I'll play the outro, which is the Santos song, which is a good.
Yeah.
I already made it an MP3, so that's pretty cool. Throw that on the old iPod.
There you go.
And pretty much it, Dave. Anything else you want before we get out of here?
No, that's it for now. You get two episodes this week. Rare treat from us. So
we'll just keep them going.
Yeah.
It's all about scheduling. If Dave and I can fit them in, we're going to fit them in. There's so much ground to cover. There's so many ideas we shoot back and forth almost daily. If you guys have any ideas or certain cards or matches you want us to cover, leave them on the Facebook page. Leave them on Twitter. You can, you know, email Dave and I. You know, again, or message us on Facebook. We're very easy to find. And we respond to our fans.
Yes.
And if we pick your stuff, then we'll give you a prize.
Yeah, hopefully one of these days we'll give out a prize.
It's all right. I'll do my plugs and stuff on another part of the podcast. So.
Cool.
All right, that's going to wrap it up for us. We'll see you next time on Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast.
This is a song of Santo by Dave. By night, a superhero, protecting the world from the famous bad guys and chiefs, like the Aztec mummy man, the Mayan vampire women, oh yeah. And you know you can hear him on the back streets of Mexico City, on a cool, cool evening. Small white Ford sports car. You know, I talk about Santo. That's right, Santo. One more time, I'm talking about Santo. The man. The man. Viva! Nella Santa!